This is Shayna
and Chris,
and we are Bad Queers. If you came out of the closet and got put in a box of stereotypes you don't belong to, then welcome to the Bad Queers Club.
All right, this week in Queer Urban Dictionary, I have studcesters. 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 Shut up. Just like laughing for this. Studcesters are former generations of studs. My sentence is, I stand on the shoulders of my studcesters. I was going to say something about like feeling the Jordans of my studcesters, but I was like, I'll stand on the shoulders. It's fine.
Growing into the Jordans of my studcesters. Is that what, you know how like we have the generations of humans and how we came from like caveman to upright human. Mm-hmm. What would that visual look like
for studs? I don't know. I mean, obviously studs go back to at least the 60s with like recorded, like the actual name of it. So it would probably be some like really sharp three-piece suit, church suit, to just kind of the evolution in fashion to what it is now. Maybe like a Nike sports bra now. I don't know. I don't know what's going on now. Like it would just be just different things. So yeah.
I was like, we're going to circle back to that statement based off of my shout out for today, but we'll see what happens, leaving you on the edge for that excitement. My Queer Urban Dictionary word of the week is wild fang lesbian. Wild fang lesbian. So a wild fang lesbian is a lesbian who owns 8,000 button-ups and all of them are Hawaiian print. They also probably have a sleeve and or a septum piercing, but that's not required.
Wow. Is this Wild Fang as in the brand Wild Fang? Okay, gotcha.
Yes. So if you all don't shop at Wild Fang, it is a queer-owned clothing apparel store, which it's actually really great and has very comfortable clothes. So check them out. My sentence is, you'll find the Wild Fang lesbians on a street corner in LA with their dogs and cuffed jeans. Wild Fang lesbian.
Okay.
Did you see the visual?
I can see it. Yeah, I can see it.
It's just very specific.
That's so funny. Very specific. That's really funny.
You know? Yeah. And I got this definition from the Her dictionary that they did a year or two ago. I think we did like a year or two ago, but it was this whole list, which is why it's such a very specific and detailed definition. So,
all right.
Wild Fang lesbian, everyone.
Wild Fang lesbians out there.
All right. This week, we have a special guest.
We do.
That we could not be more excited about having on our show. Amber Hikes is joining us today on Bad Queers, and it's going to be awesome. So let me give you a little intro. Amber Hikes is a social justice advocate, community organizer, and unapologetically queer, Black, and non-binary. As the ACLU's first Chief Equity and Inclusion Officer, she provides vision, leadership, and direction for the ACLU's nationwide strategy to support equity, diversity, and inclusion across all aspects of the organization's work and efforts. Amber serves as both internal and external ambassador on the importance of EDI as a crucial cornerstone of the ACLU's culture of belonging. Prior to joining the ACLU, Amber served as the executive director of the Philadelphia Mayor's Office of LGBTQ Affairs, where she developed policy and served as the principal advisor to the mayor on issues that affect the LGBTQ community. In her time leading the office, Amber advocated for anti-discrimination legislation at the municipal level, passed one of the nation's most trans-inclusive police policies, and added black and brown stripes to the rainbow flag, prompting an international conversation about race and discrimination within the LGBTQ community. To wrap it up, if that's not already badass enough, Hikes has been recognized nationally by Out Magazine as Community Organizer of the Year in 2018, Out 100, and by Business Equality Pride as one of the 40 LGBTQ leaders under 40. Amber believes in employing an intersectional lens in all aspects of community work and leans daily on the words of Sister Audre Lorde, "There is no such thing as a single-issue struggle because we do not live single-issue lives."
Amen. All right. Well, as mentioned, we have a special guest today. Welcome Amber, who is very literally walking, breathing Black excellence. So thanks so much for being here. Before we start, can you share your pronouns with us?
Yes, absolutely. My pronouns are she, her, and they, them.
Thank you so much for that. So we have a whole list of questions to get through because you just have like awe-inspiring
life. We have questions about your life and the things that you do.
All of the things.
It just looks like your Instagram page just looks like the life that I want to live. So you've curated that impeccably. And I just wanted to make sure that we said that from the jump.
Yeah, it's like a mix of like real actual work because you're a doer, a community organizer and human justice advocate, but then you're like having fun and living like your queer life. But before we begin, how are you and how has this last year been for you? Like, how you dealing with things? I know that big sigh.
That's a big ass question to get started. Yeah. We'll talk about Instagram because it's not entirely unrelated to that question. But I have a lot of thoughts on kind of social media and the lives that people perceive through that particular medium. But how am I doing? I'm doing all right right now. I work at the ACLU, which happens to be a place that, as you can imagine, absolutely never rest, like ever, yeah. Right? Democracy is always under attack. And so we always have to fight back, right? Freedom isn't free, whatever. So we never take a break. But it seems like the month of August is a moment where folks at least start working 60 hours or 70 hours a week rather than 100, right? So it's feeling like we can
balance.
Right, balance. So it does feel like it feels like a straight up vacation right now, just because my work day, my meetings are ending at like 7 instead of 9.
Oh, wow.
But I'm doing well. It's actually,
you're I don't doing well.
Sound
okay.
like I'm doing well, but I'm doing well. Okay. I'm doing well.
What do you do to unwind? Because again, yeah, y'all are 24/7. Like as soon as I see some like fuck shit in the headlines, I'm like, ACLU is about to get like the ACLU is coming. But like, what do you do to unwind? What do you do to de-stress?
It's such a good question. This goes back to the Instagram thing. I really do try to balance as much as I can. I have been asked over my career so many times the self-care question, and I have a good answer for it. But this year, and I would say the last like year and a half or so, I've been trying to be more thoughtful about it. So what do? Y'all, I brunch my ass off. Oh, God. I love a good brunch.
It's soulful.
Honey, soulful. It's so necessary.
It's so necessary.
Yeah.
Do you prefer a Saturday brunch or a Sunday brunch?
That is a fantastic question. I have traditionally done a Sunday brunch, but let me tell you what's been happening. The brunch turnip has been one that really, in my elder age, requires at least a 24-hour recovery.
Yes.
So it's both that I'm turning up a little bit more than I used to, and also my ass is old. So I've been leaning a little bit more into this Saturday brunch, and I don't hate it.
Yeah. It's not bad. I can't do bottomless mimosas on Sunday anymore. That's just dangerous. That's a recipe for disaster. You do need, like, when you get older, especially once you're over 30, like, no, I need 24 to 48 hours.
That's it. It's really, I'm setting myself up for success because I'm not trying to hate my Monday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, so Saturday brunch, I've been getting into it. It's been working out nicely for me. So, so I brunch. I do work out a good bit, and that's mostly just because I need to do something with this energy so I don't, like, you know, punch a wall or something like that. I used to do kickboxing, right? So I don't punch walls at all. But I need to do something with my energy to just have it released in a good way, in a productive way. So I work out a good bit. And I kiki with my friends a lot. Then you have to do that. You have to do that.
Yeah, have to. I feel like you have like a great balance of the community you've built for yourself. Like the people in your life seem like they bring you joy and impact. And I think a lot of people, especially this last year, have had to reevaluate the people that they've allowed in their space. Okay. What are some of like the key things that you look for when it comes to your crew or the people that you let into your inner circle?
Golly, that is a fantastic question. I could talk all day and all night about friendships, right? And platonic friendships and how important those are. The most important thing, so the friends that I kind of kick it with the most, I have a lot of different kind of circles of friends that we all do. The folks that I kick it with the most are folks that have been around for a good while, somewhere between like 10 and 20 years of a friend that has been around for that long. And the thing that has kept us all together, there's a bunch of queer friends, right? There's like two or three things that's kept us together for a long time. Number one, that'll be the last one. Number one is that we hold each other accountable, right? We have some real conversations. We are not afraid to call each other again. Like, sweetheart, you want some fuck shit. Like, we just got to, like, come on, let's talk about it. You're going through something, but, like, I love you, so we're going to have this conversation, right? We call each other in when that needs to happen in the most profound and loving ways, and that's why we've been able to grow together, right? It's not different from a romantic relationship. If you don't grow together, you grow apart, right? So we try to grow together and be able to bring each other along in the journeys. I think that's really important. The other thing is a group of a bunch of queer folks is that, how else to say that? Como se dice? We don't fuck each other. We never have. Como se dice? We don't fuck each other. And we don't fuck each other's partners. And that's really helpful. That's
wow. So if that's not the most epic boundary setting that you could have in the queer community, think of what we could get done as a queer community.
Oh my God.
If didn't do that.
If we could just respect that boundary, child. Because the mess it happens.
Man.
When people start fucking each other, fucking each other's people, it's a mess. It's bad.
A mess.
So that
it's
has a been mess. A consistent rule. Those two things really have served us quite well.
That's it. Like, honestly, there didn't even need to be a third. It's just
it.
Like, wow.
Yeah, that's
you,
really it.
You have made it. You have that figured really out the it. Equation for us to be successful as a queer community in our friend groups.
Is that going to be a part of the TED Talk? Because that is a queer TED Talk right there. Like, that is it. Like,
that is what TED Talk is. That was the spot right there.
But you know what? I actually stayed away from having queer friend groups, but that was a big reason. Like, I have two to three, like, really good queer friends.
Yeah.
And it's literally because we trust each other not to do anything.
That's it.
Like, we just do. Like, it's, you know, some wild shit. So, you know.
It gets so messy so damn fast. Like, that's
really
it.
Quickly.
And I have been queer and out in mostly major cities for my entire life. Mm-hmm. I've been very lucky to have that experience. And it don't matter. The community is so small. And I try to tell the baby queers, I just try to tell them, like, it seems like you're having a good time now, baby. But that shit gets us so bad. And now you've got the internet. Ooh, honey, good luck.
It's a whole other game. Chris and I, our last episode. So Chris, both of us are originally from, like, Virginia, D.C. area, but we both now live in the Bay Area.
Okay.
And Chris got to miss the whole, like, dating app era because she found her person is happily married doing that. And so we'll go and, like, have the discussion, and Chris will actively look at me and be like, what is this like?
Yeah.
Tell me more. How are you making it through?
I don't understand. There was, like, downlink right before my wife and everything. And that was
already,
and that was already too much because obviously the Black queer world is really small. So, like, living in the DMV, it was like, everybody that was on downlink is in the club. I was like, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this with y'all. But I met my wife through my best friend, who they both went to Howard together. So what was funny, and my best friend identifies as stud, so I really did ask her, like, and continuous, like, y'all ain't do nothing though, right? Like, dead ass, like, you can tell me, I'm not gonna be mad, but, like,
you
did y'all
to.
And you have to. And she's like, no. And I was like, okay, because you can tell me, I'm not gonna be mad, but just tell me.
You're, like, asking at different times,
exactly.
You get a different answer. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah, you have to. You have to.
I love that it was still a friend, because then it's either a vetted person, and the vetted that's so helpful. I didn't do the dating apps ever until I moved to LA. I did a stint in LA for about 2 years, and I didn't know anybody. I knew some people out in LA, but, like, I didn't, like, really have community like I had in Philadelphia. And I got out there, and, like, I don't know why it didn't occur to me, but I was like, how the fuck am I gonna meet anybody out here? Like, I don't, you know, and I don't know why I think that you could be so much easier to meet folks on the East Coast, but it does feel like you can walk and bump into people. You're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You really can meet people. I don't know. So I was like, am I gonna meet somebody in the grocery store? Like, how does this work? So I had to get on the apps. And child, that was an experience. I was on the apps for exactly 2 months, and I was like, I'm all set. and I never went back.
It's just, delete.
It was a journey.
What did your DMs look like during that time? But I also want to know, like, I want to know the difference between, like, that time DMs and current time DMs and what those look like.
What did they look like at that time? The LA scene is an interesting scene. That is what I will. The LA scene.
That's a great descriptor word.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is. It is an interesting scene, and I also knew a little bit about the Bay scene as well. I was mm-hmm. dating somebody who was based in San Francisco. So I was going back and forth. I was like, you know, taking JetBlue and doing that flight mm-hmm. back and forth. So I would be swiping when I was in the Bay as well. It felt like a different scene than the LA scene.
Oh, it's totally different.
So I could talk about what it was like, but I feel like the LA experience was a singular experience, right? It felt pretty yeah. unique for the apps. But I experienced folks were flighty. It felt like everybody was a transplant, but somehow they had like adopted the LA way of being. It was very strange. It was all very strange. but anyway, it was short lived, I will say that. And the DMs were not that wild. People kept it pretty cute.
No,
people also still keep it pretty cute. They will slide up in. They will make their intentions known. I appreciate the direct, sometimes explicitness about the DMs.
Yeah, I was going to ask you the type of DMs. Like, is it direct or is it kind of like that professional, like LinkedIn kind of like, yeah, so I see you out there.
Yeah, and then we'll meet you up for drinks and then it's like, oh, no.
Right. Yeah. So it's a combination. It is such a combination, and they be getting me. It's like, talking like, you really want to talk about this social justice shit, you want to know how you can get involved, da-da-da, and then they just slide right down, like, damn, you got me again. It's a mix. It's like, it's definitely the people that are out here trying to, you know, shoot the shot, which is, I always respect it, and there's, like, young folks that did a lot of, like, student activism work, and all my, like, previous work has been with young people, and I'm very passionate about young folks and their leadership, so I've got, like, there's a lot of young folks in my DMs just talking about how this work is, and there are actual like real professional contacts there. So it's a mix shot. I never know what's going to happen when I open that door.
You're like a little cautious now with
the whole mystery.
Like, where you're like, are you here?
Exactly.
What are we bringing today? Who is who's coming to this meeting in my DMs right now?
That is exactly right.
So Amber, you grew up in Atlanta, correct? Okay. And you've lived in Philly and LA. And now you're in New York.
That's right.
Can you explain the differences with like queer differences between the cities and like what is your favorite queer city that you've lived in?
Don't be doing this to me. Y'all set me up.
I just respected you with all these questions.
You're like, it's okay to say fuck LA. It's okay.
I love you, LA, but there are some challenges.
It's like we have said that. We've had that conversation between just going from Bay Area down to LA and then thinking of our DC life, and we're just like, wow.
Oh my God.
True colors.
Y'all already know, right? So East Coast and West Coast queer life are very different, right? And I was unprepared. I'll be honest. I was unaware and unprepared, child. When I got over this, what the hell is going on? It took a minute to get it together. So I will say, yes, Atlanta, Philly, it's been a good amount of time. A lot of my folks are in DC as well. So I know about the DMV scene, New York for sure. It's also a military kid. So this is not about the queer life, but I've lived in a lot of different places, born in Japan and like all around the South, spent some time in Hawaii, all over the place. So I've like, kind of been able to kind of have my tone in all of these places. What I will say is that Philadelphia is my favorite queer city for a number of reasons. It is really the place that I came into being as a queer person. My mentors, the elders that raised me in community were based in Philadelphia. Like, this is where I came into being. Also, the party that I started and those queer events I started was in Philadelphia. Philadelphia's been very, very good to me. I also get the scene. So there's a lot of challenges, but it's like, it's the devil I know. You know what I mean? So I get Philly, all of our messiness, child. I get it. It's not so much a puzzle to me as some of these other places where I will say that, you know, that being said, New York has an unparalleled queer scene, of course, right? Mm-hmm. And the Bay has a very different kind of scene that's not, it's not quite my, it feels so different from what I'm accustomed to. So it was something that I couldn't really like, I couldn't totally jive with in the way that I do with some of the other cities. But for sure, Philly, my favorite, and New York and DC, like they feel, that feels like community. Atlanta also, like, I feel like I split my queer raising between Philly and Atlanta. And so that has a big place in my heart. I'll say the things that feel that have felt really important to me for queer community. And it's really about being able to see myself, right? Being there, to the extent that I can see Black and brown folks, other folks of color in the space, then that feels like community to me. And candidly, it has been my experience that comes more naturally and more consistently in Atlanta, in DC, in Philly, even in New York as well. And it felt like it was a little bit more of a struggle when I went out in the Bay and in LA.
Oh yeah. For sure. Yeah, we commented on all the time. I've been out here for 8 years, and of course, gentrification is happening everywhere, but it is just a big difference than being on the East Coast. Like, I'll go back home and act like, you know, coming to America and just seeing like Black people everywhere. Just like, oh my God, look at us everywhere, all of us and all that. So it's a little different. But then Oakland and just living in this area has expanded like my queerness.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It is just so, it's, you know, it's not a thing out here. Like, I came out here excited about just being like queer, and everybody's like, who cares? Like, everybody's queer.
Yeah. Everybody else, your levels, neighbor, your cousin, it's fine.
Everyone. Yeah. And it's, and outside of the big cities too, it's just like, no, this is a queer area. People aren't like, you know, it's no big deal. So it's good. It's just good to experience all the different cities. So that's cool. Philly's a great queer city. I've been there once for Black Philly Pride, and it was a great time.
It is. It is. We gets down. We gets down. And it's having like a really interesting renaissance. Not right now because of COVID, but y'all, these little few months where outside opened up, we were out here, and it was popping. And I think that renaissance will continue as you know, as we get through this period that we're at, and things can open up again. But there's just, there's like some really transformative queer community that happens in this city that I think is quite underrated. That's kind of our thing, being the underdogs.
Nice.
We love to see it. We love to see it. So before we move on to like professional questions, slightly professional, I need to know also, you have a wonderful cat in your life that I feel on like
cat.
A spiritual level, because my cat isn't at the stage 5 clinger that your cat is, but he's like working on it. And I'm like, I don't need you to get to this level, but does your cat have an impact on your dating and social life? Because it seems like you have a hard life as a cat dad.
I do.
And there's a lot of attention that's needed. And I just don't understand how you're able to balance your time between each of it. And I just really need to know how you manage.
I just say thank you for seeing me. You know, thank you. Thank you for understanding like the real challenge that I go through.
The support group right now.
Thank you. Like, thank you for seeing me.
I see people, I'm here for you.
Oh, he's so cute. And oh, this is so sweet. He gets on my ever loving fat last nerve. Like he is, but he's wonderful. I have two cats actually. One is a normal cat and isn't all up in my business. He's like, I'm cool over here. You pay the rent, take care of the bills. I'm gonna eat this food, mind my business. Maybe I'll come and say hey to you every once in a while. Appreciate that, Charlie. We're good. I appreciate that. Channing, on the other hand, all up in my business. 365. It's just out of control. In fact, if we're going to be talking for the next hour, at some point, Channing will come in, make himself known, be all up in my business. I try to take care of it, try to close the door. He knows how to open a door. I don't know.
So
y'all.
Funny.
I fed his ass.
Where thumbs come from?
I fed him, so he's not going to interrupt. It's not going to matter. He's going to be like, what's going on up in here? Does it impact my dating life? sometimes folks are allergic, so that impacts, right? That's a thing.
That weeds out a solid amount of people.
Yeah, that right there, just like out. That makes sense.
That is a filter.
Some people just aren't cat people. That's fair, to be fair. I'm not a cat person. That's a different story. We'll talk about it. How I got these cats is a whole nother. That's a whole
nother. Yeah, I was like, okay. Right. I saw that. Okay. I was like, there's a background of how these became your children.
There is a story, but I'm not a cat person, but I do have to have these two cats. But no, it has not impacted it too terribly. People are just like, okay, he's a lot. He's a lot. I'm like, yep, he's here. I will say this about him. He has gotten me through so damn much. My mom passed in October of 2008, and I got Channing right at the, like, right around that time after my mom passed, and he was very much like an emotional support animal. And so he has been with me through a lot, through breakups, child, so much grief, gone back and forth over the country multiple times. It's gotten me through some really late nights and some, just some heartbreak. That's my homie. That's my homie. So he irks my whole soul, but that's my homie.
I feel like Channing lets you know that too, like all the things he does just regularly. Like, do you know what we've been through?
Right. Like, all I've done for you, right. You don't treat me like this.
So you don't have to do this.
Talk about me like this on this podcast.
I just want you to get out for my meeting. You don't have to do this every time. Like, Channing's right.
I'm over here waiting. Like, within 5 minutes, Channing's about to come in and be like, I heard you were talking about me.
I heard you talking about me.
Right. Rumors on the streets. Rumors on the streets that you're talking about me.
1,000%.
Listen to this.
Yeah. So before we leave this, how has dating gone in New York?
Ooh, child. So I'm a little, people ask this question. So I'm a little bit of a, I'm a profound introvert, right? So I have very extroverted jobs. I don't know how this happened. I have jobs
that require. That's what I was wondering. I was like, we see
that makes
stage.
Sense, though. I understand
the,
that.
It's like bursts.
You do the burst,
and then you're like, I'm out.
I'm out.
Yeah.
All my jobs are very, very extroverted jobs. All of them super external facing. Got to be with the people, talking with the people all the damn time. And I think I've gotten less extroverted as I've gotten older, but I've always been an introvert, to be totally honest. And so now that my jobs have gotten to require me to be more extroverted, the time that I don't have to be on and the time that I don't have to be with folks, like, I take that time. And I'm like, I'm not going to go do the thing if I don't have to do the thing. So sometimes dating has kind of fallen into that bucket. And I don't do a lot of dating is essentially what I'm saying. It's hard also to meet people when you work 16 hours a day.
Yeah,
and then Channing takes up the other 8, you know?
Naturally.
So how is dating? It's really mostly just been like a series of business meetings. more business. Okay.
checklist.
Exactly.
Steps. All right. We'll check in on this in about a week and see how we're doing.
See how we're doing, right? I'll circle back here. Yeah. It's a lot of
but
that.
Is it a thing of that you're making it work for you though, too? Because there's that where like, it's okay that, you know, you're not dating as much unless you want to. Like, is it working for you? Like, do you like how you balance your dating life now?
Do I like it? Ooh, y'all asking some real, I'm going to break this shit down. Break this shit down for my therapist.
Therapy, right? Therapy right now.
Texting her like, I got a list next time we podcast. I don't know that I love the balance right now. It feels like it's a necessity. Because of the way that my life is set up. And this is also something that I'm working on. You make time for what you want to make time for, right?
Absolutely.
And so I clearly need to do some shifting if I want to be making more time for dating. And right now, that's just not where I have placed the priority, right? Mm-hmm. So whether I like it or not, I definitely made some choices and some decisions here. But I think I'd probably like to be dating more. I'm poly, and I've been poly for a very long time. And I say that because it has been my experience, at least in the last 5 years. I'm looking around, I'm like, oh shit, everybody's poly now.
Right. It's become a whole
thing.
Yeah.
Especially seeing like black and poly.
Black
okay.
and poly people.
Yeah. That's a whole new world where it's like, oh, that's some white people shit. But now it's like, no. We're poly.
I'm poly and I'm kinky and I've been both for and out for like 15 years and I was like a pariah child. Like I just know nobody else like, oh, that's white people shit. Mm, what's wrong with you? And now everybody just it's in their bios. People now, I don't even
on their LinkedIn.
Endorse
for like, it. Endorse this where it's just like, yep, did that. Did that again and again.
It's a very good partner. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So I'm adjusting to that as well. And I think I'm a little, to be totally honest, the pool was a lot smaller when I was out here in these streets. And so now I'm like, oh, shit. Everybody out here like this. It's overwhelming. I think it's overwhelming. Yeah. So I just feel at home with the cats and watching. Yeah,
especially having to watch the transition for so long. I even feel like even just for like queers in general, like seeing the switch, so much has happened in such a short amount of time to then all of a sudden turn around and look and be like, wait, now it's like all in your Instagram feed. It's all in the things that your friends are talking about. You see the articles and you're just like, when did this switch? Because I've been here. Where did all of this?
This whole time. I've been here.
It's crazy.
It must be how the elder queers feel just about queer community in general. Everybody gay. They are like, doing what?
All the logos are rainbow in June. They're like, God damn. Because even in our short time, like we know what it used to be and everything. And we don't, you know, we didn't experience some of the same things they did, obviously, but like it has changed so quickly. Okay.
Like, I mean, I'm grateful.
Which is a great thing, you know? Yeah. Like, we're happy for that.
Like, not complaining. No. But you're just like,
Just noting it. Just noticing it.
Like, you just process it with other people who are just like, you saw. Yeah. Okay. I got it.
You could, I don't know if y'all feel that sometimes, but like, even, with like things being more expansive and more visible in the queer community, sometimes I do find myself being like, God, am I behind the times?
Am I keeping up with the children?
Yeah, am I keeping up? And all that? Like, that's what I like battle with sometimes, where I'm just like, God damn, okay, what's this? Like, you know, but it's cool. Like, it is an exciting time for just everything, you know?
It really is. And I'll tell you, like, it's hard to keep up, but I am so grateful. Again, I get very passionate about all the gifts that younger folks bring us. But I am so grateful for the world that young folks are creating right now. Oh, and I think people always talk about like young folks as like future leaders. I'm like, no, bitch, they're leading right now. Like,
right now.
Get behind them. Let's go. They're taking us there. So I'm grateful for it. But yeah, child, they leaving us. If we don't get with it, they gonna leave us.
They're just gonna be like, all right, you just go sit over here. We got this. Thank you.
Just get
most of the leaders we love were young. Like, they were super young. Yes. And I think we forget that. Like, that people kind of dismiss the youth and everything, where it's like, no, like Martin Luther King, all that, they were Ella Baker, they were young and doing it. So like they're the ones
always been our North Star. They have always been the ones that can teach us what the world should be looking like, and also reminding us to continue to dream aspirationally, right? Yeah. To build and not, and to like not lose hope, right? I'm very grateful for them.
We love to see it. And even so we see what we've looked back on and been like, man, this change is crazy. What is happening? But as much change as has happened, there's still a lot of stuff that like we should be paying attention to. But I think it's so diluted with everything that's happening in the world and stuff that we're missing on. I think we had a lot of conversations around even the people who were just missing like the transports bills that were happening the other policies that have just been like swooped under in the South. And then all of a sudden they're in law. What are some of the top things right now that you feel the LGBTQ plus community should be paying attention to?
Oh my gosh, such a big question. This is my work. This is my like 365, like this is the work. So, well, first I'll say that my heart and my mind are very much with Haiti and Lebanon and Afghanistan right now. I'm thinking a lot about the impacts of global imperialism, colonialism, white supremacy, right? That are at the heart of all this devastation. So I know you're asking about queer and trans community, so I'll focus there, but it's on my heart a lot. So I just wanted to like uplift that. To your point, over the last year, anti-trans bills have been sweeping through the country, and they're targeting trans youth and athletes, but they're impacting trans and non-binary individuals everywhere. One of my colleagues, Chase Strangio, reminds us that there are more anti-trans bills that became law in 2021 than in the previous 10 years combined. And so when folks are feeling like, damn, it feels like there's a lot of those, have I just not been paying attention? Or no, this is significant. This is serious, right? And I think it's easy for cis, queer folks and adults and people in major cities to feel like there's just been all this phenomenal progress, right? Especially when we're talking about these rainbow logos and all this, like, all this nonsense. But I would urge our communities to rethink that narrative and remember that for trans and non-binary youth, for trans and non-binary athletes, for those of us who live in rural areas, especially for those of us in the South, they are still being violently and relentlessly attacked. And it is, again, like an attack that we have not seen in a decade, right? It's so serious. So I think a lot about allyship here. I do a lot of work around allyship. My friend, Marquita Thomas says all the time when she talks about allyship that it's necessary for all of us to reach full equality. And the idea here is that if you think we've reached equality, right? I think about some of the like cis queer folks are like, look at all the progress we've made and things are great and, you know, marriage and you know, and whatever, right? But you look behind you and there are young people who are still fighting to be safe in their schools, or there are people whose children are being told that sports are not for them, or there are people who are still being murdered because they are Black and trans, then we haven't reached equality. You've just reached privilege, right? Mm-hmm. We haven't reached equality. You've reached privilege. And mm-hmm. so I just ask folks who feel like the LGBTQ community has arrived at equality, like, do we have equality or do you just have privilege? So those are some of the things that we need to be looking at. And I, the other thing that I would add that's not specific to queer community, but of course has implications for our folks, is the sweeping attacks on reproductive justice, right? There are abortion restrictions that are being passed all over the country, and we have to continue fighting these policies to ensure that no one is forced to carry a pregnancy or become a parent against their will. Of course, the attacks on voting rights that you all talked about, it's just these, because of intersectionality, right? These have like sweeping impacts for our queer communities as well. So y'all, it's rough out there. Shit, mm-hmm. like these Republicans ain't fucking around.
They're not. And they, you know, sometimes I don't want to say that. No, we do get distracted. We do. And they do it on purpose to distract us and everything. Is there, this might be a weird question, what is something that Republicans and the conservatives do where they're just able to galvanize their base across the board that we could take on the other side? Like sometimes I just like look at them and I'm like, how have they been able to keep this up for like, I mean, in my lifetime of just like political knowledge and awareness, like 20 plus years and everything, but like they're just able to, it doesn't matter the times or whatever, they're able to galvanize and stay together regardless of socioeconomic background and everything. Obviously they're united by hate, but like, so what do you think it is
that they're able to do? I've been thinking about this so much, especially obviously the last 4 years and of course working at the ACLU, because the attacks came from everywhere. And I think when we look at the way that the conservatives and the Republican Party in particular have come at our marginalized communities over the years, they've like pulled us apart from each other, kind of picked apart, right? This kind of these divisive tactics have served them well. This, the Trump administration in particular, that was a different strategy. That was just fuck all of y'all at the same time. And we just going to go for everybody. And when you really think about it, it doesn't seem on its face like it would be a terribly strategic strategy, right? You come for all of us, well, we just going to all come right back at you. But it was actually wildly effective. Mm-hmm. And other than, like you said, being just united by hate and having this, it just felt like kind of like relentless desire to oppress marginalized folks. In addition to that, they fight dirty. And I think it's not something that I think I've ever spoken about outside of like friend groups and like very tight circles, but they are willing to fight in ways that we are not willing to fight. And I don't know that I'm all about Sister Obama's high road. Yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not going high anymore. Lately. Yeah. Fuck y'all, I'm about to get in the muck with it.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean,
somebody just did a TikTok where they were like, Michelle, what's the limit to how high we go? Because is there an amount of time? Is there scenarios where yes, I'll go high, but the other times I can hit so low?
Okay.
Yeah. Like,
you can catch the hands. Can't even handle. I don't know, sis. I don't know.
I mean, you got to get a little dirty at this point. You have to. Like,
well, that's the thing. We keep bringing these knives to gunfight.
Yeah.
And I just don't know how it's serving us. I just don't know.
Yeah.
And it's just like they're causing chaos as well. So then it just like, as we have those knives, and then we're just like running with the scissors facing up. Now, where it's like, yes, we want to fight, but we don't know where to fight, what to do, how to do it. That's what I feel like is happening in politics right now, where it's just like, here they are in a circle of a room. We want to fight back, but we brought the wrong thing and we're running with a dangerous thing. And that's it. What it feels like.
Even when you look at the construction and of Congress right now, right? You just, I mean, the thing is, we got all the branches. We want to meet except for the Supreme Court. I would be very, very, very much do not have the Supreme Court. But we have these other, we have the branches that we need to get legislation pushed through. This was damn, the damn Republicans, they run that ball down the field. Just like score touchdown, score touchdown. They don't give a damn. Like, they run the score up. We over here trying to hold hands, reach across the aisle. Y'all don't run this damn ball down the field. And y'all don't stop playing. That's the thing. We're still messing around with the y'all need to stop playing and run the damn ball. We won. We won. Run the ball down the field.
Right.
So I think that's part of it. They get that ball and they're like, fuck y'all. I don't care. Yeah. You won.
They really do.
They're just going to run out the clock.
Less.
Yeah. Run out the clock. Let's just
throw things out there. There's CRT. Let's go with that. Like, they just, anything they could throw, obstacles, they'll just do it. Sometimes I feel like we should use, like, patriotism against them. Like, Republicans hate America and Americans. Yes. Like, they really do. Yes. Like, they really do. And they're, like, the fakest form of America out there. Like,
agreed.
The letter of, like, what was created and everything. They're fake. Like, we should
1,000%
bring a gun in at some point to this fight.
But, I love, we've been talking about this at the ACLU as well, like, being able, how they like weaponize patriotism, how they weaponize democracy against us. But to your point, Chris, it's like, they are intentionally, inherently undemocratic. And we have to just call that. Y'all literally don't want us to fucking vote. Right, we just got to call this shit out. You are so anti-American. You are so anti-democracy. And I'll say to your point about patriotism, Nicole Hannah Jones talks so often about how Black folks need to reclaim patriotism.
Yeah.
We are the real, we are the original and the real patriots for everything that we have given
into America
for this country. And she speaks really passionately about it, and it moves me every time, because it doesn't feel like it's something that we can claim. Right, we distance ourselves from that. But I love this different kind of narrative on what patriotism looks like and who America actually belongs to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, I'm not going to go on that tangent, but...
Oh, that's so true, though. That's how we got to look at it. Because, again, we don't really, like, fuck with them or claim with them, you know, until, like, the Olympics comes around or something. But, like, we really don't. But
go sports.
We built it. Like, sometimes I'll go between, like, what country can I move to leave this fuck shit, to being like, oh, fuck this. Like, we built it. It's ours. Yes. Like, you have fucked up our land. Like, y'all can move to Russia. There's a lot of land out there.
Okay.
Lots of land.
Okay. So take your ass to the Netherlands or something. I don't know.
Right. So just be like that. Lots of land. Lots of land out there. But yeah, maybe claiming it, but.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Where would y'all move to? What's on your list? If you're going to be an expat.
I got my list. This is ready. Like, it's not. So, I got my master's degree in Australia.
Oh, very good.
I loved it there. Absolutely loved it. Between that and New Zealand, and I got to go visit friends in New Zealand. And I was just like, you know, especially New Zealand lately, where I'm just like, y'all got your first case of COVID in the last 170 days, and you shut it down. I was like, yep, I will stay home. I will absolutely get that one person out. We'll be here for 2 weeks and we'll come back when you're ready. Like, yes, do each of these things. Australia, yes, even though it's like half the places I'm going to list obviously have a problematic history where they're indigenous, but everybody did. Who didn't do it? Right. Well, Spain and Portugal.
Okay.
I want island. I want beach. That's really my top things. So between like those four areas have been like my top list right now.
I'm with it.
I'm here for it. I'm like, get me on a beach and let me just like, you know, if the world's going to go down, I want to be laying on a beach, drinking my drink, living my best life. That's what I want.
It's the best way.
That's what I want.
I'm so with it. I'm so with it. And I actually spent some time in Australia, like just for a quick tick. I was out there for the Sydney 2000 Olympics. This is a funny thing. I played in the Sydney 2000 Olympic band. Band nerd all the way, y'all. Fun fact, clarinet is a mess. A mess. There are no pictures, so do not ask.
I was like, where's the archives? Especially once you said 2000, I was like, man, we're going to have to find like the VHS.
Oh, it's so bad. It's so bad,
like,
y'all.
Internet sleuth to be like, there's Amber.
Somebody has that hidden in their basement storage that they burned it on their DVD and was good to go.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, because those are VHS days. Let's be very clear.
Yep.
But I really liked Australia. I really did. And it felt more diverse than I thought it was going to be, but that was also because it was like the fucking Olympics, right? So like everybody was there. So that probably wasn't a good indicator. But I'm with you with beach. Spain is for sure on my list. But you know, I spend a lot of time in Mexico, child, so I will take my ass down there so fast.
That's top only on my list. Like, I was like, Mexico? I don't
right.
You know, everybody will say like the dangers. I was like, it is not more violent than the US. Like, stop it. Stop
don't
it.
Do that. That should really exist.
Stop it.
Literally stop it.
Only the best of times out there. But yeah, I would want to be near a beach too. So
I was like, so many of my friends are discussing like doing just like a nice black queer commune. Yeah, and just bringing us on like property and stuff and building that out. And I'm just like, where do I sign up?
I have friends that are doing that too. I wonder if our friends are talking or they're just trying to cover the country. Because I got friends that are talking about it in Atlanta and also some folks that are talking about it in California. So.
Well, y'all let me know.
Where is the application?
Where that happens with the
commune? I will drop off my fee today. Like, that's
where I want to be. Okay? Moving my family.
Yep.
So. Exactly. You know what it is? It's all the Octavia Butler queers, right? And they're like, look, this is all it is terrible. So, look, I'm just going to try to get ahead of the curve here. That's the
thing. Like, shout out to Octavia.
Yeah. Octavia Butler queers are funny as fuck.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Before we move to our bad queer opinions, finally, so we have all these issues that we should pay attention to. What are some of the top actions that you mm-hmm. would suggest that people take so that we can feel like we're making a difference? I feel like a lot of people think that they're just speaking into a void or retweeting or sharing posts and stuff to get information out. Yeah. They might be donating to different organizations. That's but sweet. What are things that we can do to be like, yes, we're making actionable change or it's making more of an impact than we think?
Yeah. Okay. Let me actually start with the piece that you were just talking about in terms of sharing content, because I actually do think that, especially in this day and age, that actually is an incredibly impactful, movement work. It really can be. So I'll say, amplify Black, queer and trans leadership, listen to and amplify Black, queer and trans voices. Our movements just have to be led by the people that are at the center of this pain, right? So we got to be listening to them. We got to be uplifting their leadership, the folks who are most impacted. And I would say amplify queer and trans Black voices when you're discussing racism and institutional oppressions, but also amplify those voices when you're sharing art and recipes mm-hmm. and parenting mm-hmm. tips, right? Like, don't just share Black and Indigenous content in times of struggle. Like, mm-hmm. share Black joy and Black expertise and Black creatives all the damn time, right? We don't see enough of that. It's like we see Black trauma and Black pain, but we are not uplifting Black liberation, right? And new ideas of Black creative expression, right? So I just want to say, when we're talking about sharing and amplifying, it actually is really important, but let's do it all the time. So to actionable steps, say this all the time, is that a lot of my work is in workplaces, in addition to the kind of movement work. Intervene. So in the increasing amount of hate speech that's just kind of like flooded all over the country is so incredibly concerning to so many of us. Anti-Asian, Islamophobic, transphobic, and anti-Semitic rhetoric, all that's on the rise. So we got to do everything we can to stop it, right? So it is what I tell, especially to our allies, because I know you all have some allies that listen to this podcast. You might not hear a racist slur this month, right? But you're definitely going to hear a racist joke. You're going to read an article that leans into some stereotypes. You're going to see fear that's going to be weaponized to harm our communities. You're going to see these things. So if you see it, you hear it, you read something that reflects that kind of prejudice and oppression, like, you need to call that shit out. You have to call that shit out and let other folks know that you're not going to tolerate it, right? So some of the tips that I give folks is, if you hear a racist or a harmful joke, sometimes, you know what I'll do? I ask the person who's telling it, explain it to me. Like, I don't get it. Explain to me why that's funny. I think I missed it. Just let them know. Let them know. Ask them to tell you why it's funny.
I stopped and I'm like, it was the lean in for me where I stopped. Yeah. I was like, I wasn't even telling a joke. And I was like, damn, I fucked up already.
Why is that funny? This shit stops right there, right? That's it. So ask people to explain the joke to you. Child, that does it every time. If you notice a journalist that's like leaning into stereotypes to make their point, write to them. Leave a comment. Let them know that you saw it. Tell them it's not okay. Speak up, speak together in public, because that's how bigots lose their power, right? We got to call this shit out. So when you know better, you got to do better. So the final thing that I think I'll say in this, because I talk to a lot of allies, and I'm not just talking about white allies, right? I'm talking about cis allies to trans folks. I'm talking about folks who don't have disabilities, right? Being allies to folks with disabilities. So I'll just say, when you know better, You got to do better. And when we're doing this work, we're going to mess up at some point in time, right? Nobody's got this all figured out. I do this literally all the time professionally, and I get called in every single day, right? I do equity and inclusion work every single day in my life, and I get called in all the time. And it's a gift. It is such a gift for somebody to be like, yo, you actually, like, that's not the word that we use anymore. Or I think you said this thing and it's harmful. Like, that is a gift. So the most important thing that we can do when somebody calls us in or tells us that we said something that was harmful or offensive is to apologize, say thank you for the call in, and then do better. That's labor that somebody's doing for you. So do your research so you can understand what they were saying and what they called you in about, and then do better. Go out and spread the word. Go call other people in, okay? It's okay to get called in. It's okay to not be perfect. It's okay to keep trying and keep showing up to do better. So those are the things that I would say, right? So keep amplifying the voices that we know need to be amplified. Intervene. And when your ass gets called in, invite the call in, do better, and then go forth out in the world and call other folks in. So that's what I got right now.
Oh my gosh. Just gems.
Just leaning like it, just dropping it. I was just like, man, microphones just flying past me everywhere. Yes. Just throwing them out to the people, but especially with the call in and want to make sure that people actually heard you say call in with that as language that we need to be doing, because I think everybody's so worried about like the call out and the amplification of just like, oh, calling out leads to cancel culture, which leads to this, where it's like when you're calling in, it leans into accountability.
That's right. And I say call in because it's like, I'm bringing you into community. Right. I'm helping you out. Like, I talk about this often because I get these questions. I get these talks, and folks, they bristle up because I'm talking that talk. And they say, okay, how do I deal with the defensiveness that comes up here? And I'm like, you know what? The way I think about it is getting called in. And again, you're exactly right to make that point. It's a call in. It's not a call out. You can always also think about it as being called forward. I use that as well. People are calling you forward in your growth, in your journey. Being called in, it's kind of like somebody telling you that there's food in your teeth. And when you think about it, right, like, that shit is awkward. Like, oh, it's, I don't want to have to tell you. You don't want to have to hear it. But I just did you a favor. I did you a favor and told you there's food in your teeth so you can go handle that so you don't go into the next room and make a fool of yourself. It's literally the same damn thing. It's awkward for everybody to have to tell you that you used the wrong word or you misgendered that person or what you just said was a microaggression, but I'm helping you out so you don't go in that next room and make a fool of yourself. And everybody's like, oh my God, this movie. You know? So think of it as somebody telling you that there's food in your teeth. It's a gift. Appreciate it. It's going to be awkward for a moment, but push through. Somebody's helping you be better.
That's perfect. And even just put the point about like, that's labor on their part.
Okay.
Like that, they're doing that free for you to help you out. Like, it's no, just calm down. Calm down. It's okay.
It's a lot easier for somebody to just be like, that idiot, and keep moving, right?
Yeah.
It's so much easier.
Yeah.
Like, somebody's actually invested in your growth. That's a gift. They give a damn about you. That's a gift.
Take it as a gift. Well, I want to be sure that we get to these bad queer opinions, because what type of bad queers will we be if we didn't have unpopular queer opinions? And I will go ahead and get it started, because I feel like mine is quick and to the point. Chris, I like yours, so I'll go ahead and get started because I like yours better.
Okay.
So queer people as a whole, especially in your dating life and things. And mind you, I'm going to rewind real quick. Amber, please feel free to tap in and respond. And if you have any comments or you disagree or agree, this is a judgment encouraged type zone if you disagree and or agree to talk about it. Bring in the people. So for me, queer people, I need you to be more upfront about your feelings. I've seen more people sit and be like, oh, I'm going to sit here and play this chase game. Thirst trap you and not say nothing. I'm going to be like, I'm not ready for a relationship right now. And then get mad when that person leaves you.
Oh,
the worst.
This is the stuff that the breeders do. We are not carrying this into our community. Okay. This is not what we are doing. This is not the crossover event that we want.
That's right.
Or need. So I just need us to be a bit more upfront, because I had asked Chris this before. I was like, Chris, do you stop chasing your wife?
No.
You stop making them.
You got to keep her.
That's right.
You got to keep going. Sheesh.
It brings in a whole better element. So never stop doing that. But also don't sit here and feel like you're playing so hard to get because you that bitch. It's like, no, you're not.
You're not.
Everybody can be left. You're not.
Hard to get isn't like a time waster too, especially at this point. Like, come on,
literally,
like, just like, what are we doing? What
we're
we
grown.
Doing?
Yeah,
we're grown. We're grown. Like, let's not do this. Like, yeah, nah, you gotta.
You're paying your own bills. You're making your own money. Like, we don't have time.
I'm so with that. And yeah, say it with your chest. Like, let's go. I'm so with that. You're right. Leave that nonsense and the heteronormative bullshit to the breeders. You're right.
That's it. I love just had it. To be real quick about it. I've seen it trending lately, and I'm just like, stop. Please stop it.
Yeah.
I just want to go and like bat everybody's
when
hands.
Somebody
like, don't do
stops
that.
Chasing, you know?
Don't eat like, that dessert before you can get that. Like, stop it. Just go and sit down so I can bring you a plate and life is good. Like, you're welcome.
No, that's a good one. That's a really
thank you. Appreciate it. Chris, right. What is your bad queer
well,
opinion?
My bad queer opinion. I was just thinking on this, y'all. I think it's time that we start respecting thirst trapping as a true art form.
Mm.
It takes a lot to produce.
It does.
It's when effective, it's a scroll stopper.
Mm.
I mean, it makes us say, goddamn. Mm. And I just think that we should leave the negative connotations with it because, I mean, it's healthy for us to see a good thirst trap. It's healthy for the internet. Yeah. It's good for us. Like, I
it's
think
good for our community.
It's good for our community. It's good for all. A good thirst trap. You know how many photos, the production that goes behind that, like that
the
somebody
light,
is taking. I mean, come on.
That's good. That's
I just think that we should start respecting thirst traps more. It is a true art form. When done right, we all know we'll scroll through and be like, ooh, God. You'll sit there with it for a little bit. You'll sit there with it and just, okay.
Like, wow.
And I just think that it's
we've
like,
made it. We have made it.
It's time to respect it a little bit more because it's good for all of us. It's good for all of us. So
you know what? I am just now realizing that apparently there's some people that aren't respecting thirst trapping as a legit art form. I've been here. I've been out here respecting it. I'm with you. I'm totally aligned. And to the point about how it's good for community, like there's a representation component there too, right? Because there's all kinds of everybody's thirst trap, right? But I see it as a way that you see your body or your presentation, right? Or your skin tone. And you're like, damn, that person looks like me in this way.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I can feel myself too, right? It's transformative. Yeah. It can be transformative.
It really is transformative.
Yes.
It's healthy.
Growth. Growth is what that is.
I love it.
So yes, Amber, can you please share with us one of your bad queer opinions?
I have one. I don't know if I did this right. Y'all will tell me if I did this
right. You probably did do it right because the rules are made up and the points don't matter.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, then, great. That's exactly my kind of game. So we're aligned. Okay. I probably should have worked on how I was going to phrase this. I have long felt this way. We should normalize that it is okay to choose your sexuality. Listen, hear me out.
I'm ready.
Let's be very clear. I didn't choose to be queer. I was very much born this way, child. And if you can't see, I'm doing quotes, y'all. In fact, I often say that my coming out story, it wasn't about when I discovered that I was queer. It's like when I discovered that everybody else wasn't, right? Like, that's a whole nother story. However, there's this narrative and this common refrain that we all have heard, right? I didn't choose this. I was born this way. It's not my fault that I'm queer. And I reject this narrative entirely. Let me say, I thank God every single day that I'm queer. No lie. Like, legit, yes, my friends will tell you every single day I find another reason to be grateful that I am a whole entire queer person. And yes, we are brilliant and talented and fashionable and contribute all the culture and all the art. But on some real shit, queer community has saved my life more times than I can count. And our ways of building family, of moving through the world, of supporting one another, of making something out of nothing, it's incredible. The fact that we can find joy out of pain, we can find celebration in despair, we can find beauty in so much ugliness, resilience in the face of so much injustice and oppression, right? Much like Black folks can as well. Like, it's powerful. Like, even when you look at the story of Pride, right? You, like, take the violence and the hatefulness of a homophobic police raid and not just fighting back, but like turning that into this celebratory, colorful event that it is. Like, that's queer, folks. And y'all, in addition to all that, the straights are just not okay. So I'm just saying, like, they're not. So every single day, I'm grateful for being queer. So I'm very, very queer. Always have been. I didn't choose it. But also, if I could, I would. I would choose it over and over again, just like this black skin baby. I didn't choose it. But honey, if I want to look white tomorrow, oh my God, the trauma. The trauma. That's what we're not going to do. So that's how I feel. Normalize choosing for sexuality. Like, there is nothing wrong with folks who are like, yeah, that's the better way to go. I'm going to choose to be that.
Yep. It's like, that looks fun over there. I like this.
Right? Like, I don't know. I don't know if that's
talking about like feelings and cooking each other's stuff. Okay. Like, I want to be on that side.
So funny. That is literally the definition of a back hair bit, where that is spot
that
on.
Was
but
it.
I would
it.
Wake up and if I woke up and wasn't queer, I would be like, God, what did I do? What did I do? How do I get back? Tell me, Lord. Like, tell me, Lord. I'll do it. Just please.
It's like, what is that? Is that a Christmas story? Is that the one with Ebenezer Scrooge? Is that the one? Yeah. Like, look back. It's like, where did I go wrong in my life? Help me fix this, because I can't. I don't want to be punished like this.
Oh God. Or like, just like a Freaky Friday where it's like, no, not doing this.
Oh
no,
my God. No. I feel like this would be like the alternative story to that Lovecraft Country episode. Oh. She woke up as the white woman.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Like, I feel like this is like the alternative.
Yes, it is.
What that would
it
look
really
like.
Is. Oh, spot on. Oh, wow. Lovecraft Country.
Oh. I know. We want it. Speaking into existence.
Yeah. Well,
oh my gosh. All right. Well, I can't believe we've already made it to our shout outs and the end of our show. This could go all day. Like, this was so great. We've had a blast. We hope you have as well, Amber.
I'm having such a good time. You know, this is like a whole kiki with some friends. I'm loving it.
Okay.
Yes.
So we want to create.
I mean, that's the goal. That is the overall goal. Well, let's go ahead and get into these shout outs. This week, my shout out goes to the Instagram page Studs in Suits.
Oh.
It literally says it in the title. It is so good. They post images of well-dressed studs in order to ungender fashion. And it's great inspiration. It provides lots of new people for you to add to your timeline. Speaking of the thirst traps we were discussing, there is your grid right there. So be sure to follow at Studs in Suits and like everything, follow everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. Amber, you've had some really good three-piece suits, by the way. Just listen.
Well, I just heard the shout-out, and I was scrolling today, and they had somebody with, like, a monochromatic suit situation. I don't know if y'all saw that today. And I was like, you know what? I may need to do a little submission. I may do a little reel.
Yeah.
Y'all, I miss my suits so bad. I miss my suits. I'm just in pajamas.
I want to have a suit. I don't have a three-piece suit, but I really want one. I'm ready and I want it. And I keep looking at all of y'all's pages between your suits, between all of the suits and this. Like, there are so many people there that I now follow. I'm just like, I'm ready for the time when we're opening back up. I'm ready. And somebody needs to help me do it because I can't do it by myself. And I already know.
I got you. You usually wear a suit everywhere, like to the movies, the club. Yeah. Like,
it's going to be so casual. I'm just going to show up fancy just because I can. And it's going to be great.
Hilarious. Grocery shopping in her three-piece suit. Like,
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Like, chill out.
I won't.
My shout out is to one of our faves, George M. Johnson. Their new book, We Are Not Broken, will be out September 7th. Want to alert everybody to that, to pre-order now, to get in line and get your coins ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
George is coming out with another book. And make sure you pre-order that.
Another book. You got a show. Doing
a
all the
show,
things.
Yeah.
All the things. I was like, you're feeling so nostalgic. Excited. Go back and listen to the episode where he came on and joined us. So do all of that.
Oh, I'm loving all these shout outs, y'all. Okay, is it time for mine?
Absolutely.
Okay. So my shout out is to a Black queer woman named LaTanya Myers. She runs a nonprofit organization called Above All Odds. She is an amazing advocate who is fighting to help returning citizens who are impacted by the criminal justice system and helping them be able to thrive. She just won a Reebok Human Rights Award. These are awards that are given out to young activists who are fighting against systemic oppression, trying to dismantle systemic oppression, and just making the world a better place for all of us. Her own story is mind-blowing, it's inspirational, it's powerful. But what she's done with her own life, her own platform, is the real story. And that's the real inspiration. So shout out, always shout out to Black queer women, and definitely shout out to Black queer women who are formerly incarcerated, who are doing the damn thing to end systemic racism and oppression in our country and our world. So shout out to LaTanya Myers.
Nice.
Come through, LaTanya. That's amazing. Doing the work. Amazing work. Well, Amber, we appreciate you so much for being on the show. Can you please let all of our listeners know where they can find you and follow you and just give you all of the virtual flowers that they should
and
be
where to donate as well for ACB.
Yes. So. Oh my gosh, absolutely. So I am on all the things, but I don't really keep up with all the things. So the most active thing probably is Instagram, just because I find that much easier than any of the other social medias. So my name on there is Amber Hikes. I think it's Amber underscore Hikes is what that is. Also on Twitter is Amber Hikes. Facebook, the same thing. And I definitely ain't on Facebook like I need to be. And on LinkedIn. So you can find me, Amber Hikes, on all the things. And donate to Black trans organizations like For the Girls, which is incredible. Donate to an incredible LGBTQ organization in Philadelphia called Galay. It's spelled G-A-L-A-I-E, and they are a queer social justice, radical queer social justice organization. And of course, donate to the ACLU. But the ACLU, we're doing all right. So I want folks to send their coins to those smaller organizations, the folks who are very much on the ground and need them desperately. So that's where you should send your coins. And this has been such a pleasure, you all. Like, just such a fun little kiki. And yeah. I would be so happy to come back and kiki with y'all anytime.
Yes. That's all
we that was that we was literally going to be the follow-up. Come back. It was great. Thank you.
Yes. I was like, we got it recorded.
We it's did great. It's on here. Anytime you come back got and be it. Like, oh, no, like, I'm kind of busy. Be like, hey, we're just going to send you this little clip where you said.
Where you said you were going
to. You did say.
That's how it works.
We don't want to guilt you, but yeah. It was said. Exactly. So, yes. Well, everybody else, we hope that you enjoyed this episode. And as always, we will see you next week.
Take care. This podcast was brought to you by the Her app, the largest LGBTQ+ dating and community app for women, trans, and non-binary folks. Be sure to download the app in the Apple Store or Google Play Store.
Shout out to Sienna Liggins for our amazing soundtrack and Cesar for making us sound like we know what we're doing.
It's me again. Can we talk about things? I'm so sorry that I'm
Hello?